You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The One Tough Mother Podcast. The One Tough Mother Show is real talk with special guests, including industry leaders, celebrities, and amazing women who've overcome adversities to work their way to the top and are willing to share their real life lessons. Remember, you don't have to be a mother to be one tough mother. It's all about you.
Hi, welcome to the One Tough Mother Show. Holy cow, Seth, it's raining. I can't even believe the Northeast. Rain. Imagine that.
It's like we're in London.
I swear. I looked it up this morning because Ma came down and she's like, and she's doing really great, by the way. She came down the steps. She's like, hey, nice. Is it still raining? I'm like, Ma, it's raining for the rest of the year. Just get used to it.
That's it. It's like the ice age. Now it's the rain age.
It's crazy. My son was actually affected by the tornado. He had about 20 or maybe 25 foot fir trees outside his yard that lined his street so you couldn't see out into the street. It took 6 of the 8.
Wow.
Yeah, it looks like a disaster zone.
I lost 2 of my goats. Yeah.
You have goats?
No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, geez, I was going to say. No wonder your neighbor hates you, dude. I didn't know you had goats. Yeah, it's sickening. No, I'm done with it, actually.
Yeah.
What else has been going on with you?
I'm just really my oldest, my stepson is 10, and I'm just amazed. Like, he's just, you know, I'm kind of tough on him because I'm one tough brother, and I'm also one tough dad. I'm just tough on the kids, but he's such a good kid, and he's just so well rounded. Saturday he had he pitched 2 innings in his baseball game, and he did really well, and then he had 3 hits, but you know, like kind of like little league hits. But then his last time up, I said, "You're going to hit it good this time." And he smashed one last inning. Like, he would be the winning run. It's like going. This kid reached up as high as he could, stretched out, and he caught the ball. And I was like, but it was great. And everybody's like, oh, wow, it was a great shot. And, you know, he just had a good game. He's really happy. And he's playing cello. He's going to be in the 5th grade concert, even though he's only in 4th grade. And then yesterday we went to the art show. He's one of the few kids in his grade picked to have his art displayed at the art show at the high school. So, I mean, he had straight A's at school this year. So he's just so well-rounded, and just really proud of him.
And wow.
And it's just, you know, I'm a little bit in awe too. You know, it's like, wow. I said, I had like basically none of this going on at that age. And it's really impressive. And it also goes to show you that how much music and art play a part in education. You know, people always talk about it, but people don't realize that it really does. It really helps kids.
I think so, too. And you know what? The fact of the matter is, when they're in 5th grade and they're doing that well, because you're talking about he's starting to get preteen. So there's going to be like outside influences now that are really going to start hammering him. If he's got that great of a foundation, that's just a huge testament to you and your wife, who are just really doing really well raising him. And the fact that he's got a real solid personality. And if you keep him on that straight and narrow, I mean, if you can really, you know, keep him enthused about his life and all his extracurricular activities, I think he'll do extremely well throughout his life.
Yeah, he's only 4th grade. That's amazing.
Yeah, and getting into this, like you're talking about 5th grade, 6th grade, 7th grade. Now life is going to start getting a little tougher, and there's going to be a lot more influencing from his outside. So you got to really, he's got a great foundation. I'm really happy for you both, and I'm really proud of you both, because it's a lot. It's a lot nowadays to keep a kid his head level and keep him looking forward. And he's got to be proud of himself. He's got to be. Yeah.
And we just got him a phone too. It's funny. He's like one of the last kids in his grade to get a phone. But you know, we went to Target and got a track phone. It's like, you know, you pay. It's very cheap. The phone's cheap. The plan's cheap. It's just for him to text us when if he wants to stay after school and play with his friends at school. You know, and it's or just has to get in touch with us. Other than that, we're not like, you know, we didn't get him an iPhone and, you know, he's not playing Fortnite at lunch and anything, you know.
Right.
Just try, yeah, and he listens, and he's just a good kid, and hopefully we're going to try to keep him that way.
Yeah, I'm really happy for you. I'm really proud of it. Nowadays, it's just so very, very difficult with the internet and everything. And we talk about this all the time. It's difficult to keep your kids like kind of on a straight path. But you know, if you're involved, as involved as you, Melissa, are with your children, I think it's much. You have much better chance and much better opportunity to keep them going in the direction you want them to go into. So congratulations, dude. I think that's huge.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And tell him I said you owe him something really cool.
I told him. I let him know because you told me that yesterday. I said, all right, yeah, pick something. He's still thinking.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, that's great. Good for you. Well, I mean, today's guest, we're going to talk to her in just a moment, but this blew my mind. I mean, I've been on Kat Kanavas's show. She has her own show, and she wrote a second book, and it just blew my mind when I'd heard everything that she's been through. She's an amazing woman. She's a good friend, actually, and she has a crazy story. I mean, the story's just like amazing. And she wrote, her first book was like Surviving Cancer Land. And she wrote that back in 2014. And it's about her going through cancer and how she approached it and the things that helped her through it. But her second book, Dreams That Can Save Your Life, she actually teamed up with Dr. Larry Burke, who's an amazing doctor. And it's just it's a crazy book. And it's just really shows that, you know, we have a lot more in us than we reach for. We have a lot of things in us that I think environmentally and socially we suppress. I always say animals have that, you know, the animal sense. And I think we're animals, and I think we have that. We just suppress it. So I can't wait for when we come back, we're going to talk to her. She's an amazing guest. And hey, everybody, don't forget your umbrella today, tomorrow, the next day, the next day, the next day, the next day. And we'll be back.
The One Tough Mother Podcast. Real talk with amazing women who have worked their way to the top and want to share their real life lessons with you.
Today, we welcome to our show an author, a dream expert, a radio and TV host who penned her first book in 2014 titled Surviving Cancer Land, in which she explains how she used her intuitive aspects of healing to beat cancer. Often, she had to persuade her doctors to cooperate with her. And now, her newly released book last month, Dreams That Can Save Your Life, our guest teams up with Dr. Larry Burke, a pioneering TED Talk speaker on healing dreams and cancer, to chronicle the stories of participants in Dr. Burke's groundbreaking Breast Cancer Dreams Project, which our guest was part of. It's an amazing, amazing story, and it's with great pleasure that we welcome to the One Tough Mother Show my friend, author, and dream expert, Kathleen O'Keefe Kanavas. Yay, Kat!
Thank you so much for your show. It's like party time again, because you were on my show and we had such a great connection that I couldn't wait to be back on with you.
I know. I was super excited. I was telling Top Brother Seth about it. So how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I mean, you know, our book just launched like 3 weeks ago, and it went to the top of the Amazon bestseller number one spot in 12 hours.
Amazing.
For both the Kindle and the book. So I've been busy doing radio shows like yours, and it's been a great ride.
Oh my gosh, Kat, it's such a crazy, crazy cool concept. You have to walk us through. So that means you're going to have to take us back from the beginning and give us some background and tell us how this all happened.
Well, it happened. It's hard to believe, Karen, but it's been almost 20 years.
Wow.
When I first found out that I had the breast cancer, when the dreams or nightmares first started, it was in 1999. And I remember the dreams started right after I had gone to have my yearly checkup, and my doctors told me I was healthy and to go home. So I did. And that night I had the beginning of these recurrent nightmares where I would be having my regular dream, like I'd fall asleep, and then all of a sudden my dream would freeze, just like the page on your computer.
Oh.
And I'd be looking around going, well, that's strange. Everything's frozen. I mean, if there had been a bird flying in the dream, the bird would be frozen in the sky. And all of a sudden that pop-up would appear on that frozen screen and there'd be movement inside the pop-up window, and that window would become a door. And through that door would walk a monk, a Franciscan monk. It looked like St. Francis of Assisi just walked through that door with his hood up, you know, and this monk would say to me, come with me, we have something to tell you. And I'm like, well, okay. And I would walk through this door, which I then termed the door between realms, or the room between realms. It was a sacred dream doorway to the divine. I really believe that. And in this realm between realms, these Franciscan monks would take my hand, put it on my breast, and say, do you feel that? I'd say, yeah. They'd say, that's breast cancer. You go back to your doctor and you get a second set of tests.
Wait, now, wait a minute, Kat. This was a reoccurring dream?
Yes. I had it about over 3 months. I would have it, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 times.
Kat, why monks? Was there some correlation to anything?
No, Karen, no. I'm not even Catholic. I have no idea why monks, except, you know, who's going to argue with a monk?
Right.
You know, I'm a pretty strong woman. I'll argue with most things, but, you know, it's kind of hard to argue with a monk when you can't even see their face because their hood is up. And there's a bunch of them. There's like this army of monks in this room. And they're going, yeah, you have breast cancer, which is, you know, you want to believe your doctor, Karen. When your doctor says, hey, you know, you're healthy, go home, that's what you want to hear. That's what you want to believe. You do not want to believe monks in a dream saying you have breast cancer, go back. Like, you know, anybody really loves to go and get, you know, their blood tested, a mammogram, a pap smear. I mean, that is not my most favorite thing in the world. I'd much rather believe the doctor who says I'm healthy than the monks that say I'm sick. But it was a recurrent dream, which meant it happened over and over and over again. And each time they'd say, no, you go back to your doctor. So finally, in the third month, when I had the same dream again and the monks walked into my dream when it froze, I started crying. And the monk was standing there looking at me and I said, I know why you're here, but I don't know what else to do. My doctor is not listening to me. He keeps giving me mammograms. He keeps giving me blood tests. He can't feel anything. He has sent me home. If I really do have breast cancer, help me. You do something to help me if you don't want me to die. Wow. And this monk reached into his cloak, into his, you know, where he had his hands, and into the sleeves, the big, big sleeves. He pulled out this little tiny feather. And he said, if you go back to your doctor tomorrow without an appointment and you use this tiny little white feather as though it were a sword to cut through his arguments, you're going to get the test you need, which is exploratory surgery. That's the only thing that's going to find this now. So, and then he disappeared.
Wow.
So I went back to my doctor the next day, showed up on his doorstep. His receptionist immediately hit the panic button. The doctor walked out, right?
Right.
Why are you back? And I said, because I know something's really wrong. And long story short, I used that feather as though it were the sword. I imagined that feather between my fingers when I was talking to him and said, I don't know where else to go. You know, I'm not a hypochondriac, but I need exploratory surgery to find this. And my gosh, Karen, he looked like I had just set myself on fire in front of him.
Yeah, and he said, you're asking for surgery. You're like, cut me open, find this.
Yes, exactly. And he's going, no, I can't do that. It's against my policy and it's against hospital policy. And again, I imagined that feather. I imagined pointing it at him. And I said, I need help. I need you to help me. And, we see all these vampire shows on TV, Karen, where the vampire just kind of waves his hand and says, you know, you want to go jump off the bridge and land on your head. And the guy goes, oh, yeah, I definitely want to go jump off that bridge and land on my head. That's kind of what this feather did. My doctor looked at me and he said, okay, just a minute. He goes out, comes back in, and he had made an appointment for surgery for me 2 days after New Year's.
Wow.
And long story short, I was in stage 2 aggressive breast cancer with it in a lymph node. And that was validated by pathology reports.
Wait, Kat, now, it was not, you couldn't feel it. Obviously, you can't see it.
Nope.
And you were not ill at all. And where did they start? Like, where did they start with this exploratory surgery?
Well, he said to me, point to where you think, you know, where it is. And I said, it's right here. Cause I kept putting his hand on it. Like the monks did me. I put his hand on it. And I said, can you feel it? And he said, no. I said, oh my God. And I said, well, it's right there. It's right there. I can feel it. I can feel it. So he said, you know what? I'm just going to go right down over top of where you're showing me and let's see what we've got. There it was. So that was the beginning. All right. That was the first time. And then 5 years later, Karen, almost to the date, I had the chiefs of everybody now watching me. And the chief of radiology, the chief of oncology, oh, the chief of everything, you name it. If it was a chief, it was my doctor. And they were, again, using mammograms to watch for recurrence when the mammograms didn't find the first breast cancer. And I kept asking them, why are you using mammograms again to look for breast cancer when they didn't find the first one? And my doctors kept saying, the mammograms are only as good as the people who take them and the people who read them. We're the best. If there's a problem, we'll catch it. And the dreams and the monks started up again, Karen. And oh my God, it was so bad. When I saw them, I was like, no, I know why you're here. Go away. Go away.
I can't even imagine. That must have been so freaky.
It was. And so I had a mammogram. I had a mammogram and the doctor read it right there in front of me. And he said, congratulations, Mrs. Canavis. You've hit your 5-year mark. You're healthy. Go home. And the monk literally orbed into the room. That was the first time that had ever happened. The doctor couldn't see him, but I felt him right beside me. I saw him as if I were in a dream. He pointed to one of the mammography films and he said, you tell the doctor to look right here. So I did. I pointed to it and I said, look right here. And the doctor turned to me and said, Mrs. Canavis, that's not the breast that has cancer. This over here is the breast that has cancer. And I said, yeah, but what about this area right here? Look right here. And he turned in his chair and he looked at me and he said, you're healthy. Go home. And instead, I ran down to L2, the lower level, second floor where they do radiology, to the chief of radiology. And I said, I need an MRI. I know something is wrong. He said, you know, I just talked to the doctor upstairs, and we think that you're just having an anxiety attack. There's nothing wrong with you. You are so healthy. Go home. And that night, a whole army of monks came through that door. And they said, you go back tomorrow. You get an MRI. You don't take no for an answer. So I did. I went back. And I was a real pain in the butt, Karen. I told the doctor, I said, you know what? I'm not leaving your office. I was in the waiting room with all these people. I said, I'm not leaving this office till I get that MRI. I don't care if I have to lie down here on your floor, kick my feet like a 2-year-old who's had candy taken away. You're going to have to call security to drag me out by my heels. Because I knew those monks weren't wrong. They weren't wrong the first time. So the doctor just kind of threw up his hands and he said to his secretary, okay, go ahead, get her the MRI. And it took me 3.5 months to get that MRI. And I had a 9x11 centimeter tumor that sent them running for the hills and my records disappeared.
Oh my gosh. Of course they did. Of course. That is just, what an incredible story. I can't even believe it. So now you have this tumor and aren't they like, oh, Kat, or oh, Miss Canavis, we're so sorry.
No, the one doctor just said, well, I guess mammograms aren't your friend. And I said, you think?
Wow.
I mean, seriously, he goes, well, we already had a big meeting with the chiefs of everybody here at the hospital. And I said, well, yeah, they're all my doctors. Wow. So I ended up going through chemotherapy again, radiation therapy again, 6 months of it. And then at the end of my treatment, like going into that eighth month, I said, you know what? The dreams came back again. I mean, it was like endless, Karen. It was just endless. And my monks said, you need a double mastectomy. You need to have, and I had asked for that and the doctors wouldn't give it to me. So now they were adamant. No, we're not going to give you a double mastectomy because we are not going to take a healthy breast. We're just not. And I said, but you don't know, it's not healthy. Your tests aren't working. And so finally what I did was I went to New York and I got new doctors. And when they agreed to do the double mastectomy, they found cancer in the other breast that had been missed with the MRIs and missed with everything again. Now, those doctors in New York had all of my tests, all of my records that were left, all of that. And when they read through those records, they called the doctors in Boston and said, what's going on? How can you possibly miss a 9x11 centimeter tumor? How can you possibly not, you know, wait 3.5 months? To do an MRI. I mean, with 3.5 months, I could have had a much better treatment. Even the first time, taking 3.5 months to do exploratory surgery, my treatments didn't have to be that severe. And so that's why this book, Dreams That Can Save Your Life, Early Warning Signs of Cancer and Other Diseases, is so important. The answers are often in our dreams. And if we wait long enough for the medical community to concur with the dreams, it might be too late.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable, Kat. And so how many years had lapsed at this point when you were in New York?
It's been almost 15 years, 16 years. Oh, yeah. Wow. So I'm doing great. And I remember, Karen, you know, and I haven't told many people this, but, you know, I'm going to tell you on your show, when I found out that I had recurrence that was that big, I thought I was going to die. I really did. A 9x11 centimeters recurrence, that just, you know, you just don't recover from that.
Right.
And so I was crying all the time and I fell asleep on the bed one afternoon because I was exhausted from my emotions. Emotions are exhausting. And I laid down in the bed and I dreamed that I woke up, but I was still sleeping. I didn't realize it at the time. It's called the waking dream. And I dreamed that I woke up and looked up and there were the monks around my bed and I got really mad. And I said, I know why you guys are here. I know I'm dying. You don't need to tell me that. I figured it out. Got it. But you may want to go and warn God that when I get there, I am going to have some really big bones to pick with him. Because I don't know why I would have to get this once, let alone twice. I can't imagine what I ever did in any lifetime that would be bad enough to have to go through this again. And the monks looked at me and they said, don't you remember? And I said, remember what? They said, you wanted to come down onto the earth plane during a time when higher power and God is being taken out of everything, shoved into a closet and that door locked, and science is being worshiped as a God. And you said you were going to show that science goes so far and then comes God. And we told you we would be with you every step of the way. And I looked at them and I said, what the hell was I smoking up there?
Oh, my God.
In my mind. And they started laughing. And they said, no, that's what you said. And here we are. So that's when I realized that no matter how bad this got, no matter what I had to go through, it's what I had predetermined as my life purpose to bring a knowing back into the earth plane that was being swept under the carpet. And so that's what I've been doing ever since. And that's why I decided to take this research that Dr. Larry Burke was doing, because I was one of his research patients, turn it into a book, not just for the medical society, the medical community that could poo-poo it, but all of the people listening on your show who, if they walk into their doctor's office with this book and say, look, I had a dream, I know something's wrong. And all of these stories in this book are validated by medical pathology reports. So I know there's truth behind it. It's going to change medicine as we know it today, which is focusing on, if we can't see it under a microscope, it doesn't exist.
Oh my gosh, Kat, I am so proud of you. And it's just, it's such a step to go in the face of what the norm is. Anytime that we step out like that, it's very, very frightening, but it's also empowering at the same time, wouldn't you say?
I would. And so does that mean I get to be one of the tough mother team members?
You're the one tough mother army, babe. You're in it. I definitely will get you. You'll be getting your shirt. So tell me, how did you get in touch with Dr. Larry Burke?
He had, when he was getting ready to do his research, he had gone onto the internet to see if he could find other women who had dreams that diagnosed their breast cancer, because he already had a team of about 4 or 5. And those included the women who had come into him because he was chief of radiology at Duke University at that time. So they had come into him and said, you know, I know something's wrong. I had a dream and I need a mammogram. And boom, there was the cancer. So he said, my gosh, if there's 5 of them, there's got to be more than that. So when he went online and researched, my book came up. And when he read my book, he said, yes, yes, that's what I'm looking for. This happened 3 times. I mean, I could understand once, maybe twice, but 3. So we teamed up and we started doing panels, discussion panels at the International Association for the Study of Dreams, which is where we're going to be doing another panel this June 17th. We're going to be in Scottsdale at the DoubleTree Resort in Paradise Valley. And we're going to be talking about dreams that can save your life. And we're going to have 2 other panelists on there with us who are both doctors, and they are in the book. And they had dreams that diagnosed their illnesses. One had lung cancer. And the other one was a doctor who used to work on children. She was a pediatrician. And the dreams her children told her about healing and about her illness, she put into the book.
Oh, my gosh. That is just so powerful. Kat, that's amazing. How extremely interesting is this? That's incredible. And Dr. Larry Burke, he really sunk everything into this, right? Like, he really believes and wholeheartedly pulls it through, right?
Oh, yes, he does. And I mean, you have to walk a very, very fine line when you're dealing with things that are outside the normal medical box in the medical hospitals, because he's at Duke University there and he's chief of radiology. He's got to walk a very fine line. Otherwise, he could very easily lose his job. And so he did, because what we did in this book with his research and the research that he did, he tied everything back to the pathology reports. So no matter how woo-woo or out there somebody's dream was, it was grounded with the pathology report. Now, nobody in the medical community could argue with that, because basically it was a double-blind study. The doctors didn't know about the dreams. Most of the people just went in and said, you know, I know something's wrong, or I'm having pain. I mean, having pain, I learned from reading all of these stories that the people sent us, the 41 stories in this book, the pain word gets you whatever you want. So even women who were not in pain, but knew something was wrong because of their dreams, would walk in and say, I'm in pain, so I need a mammogram, and they'd get it. And boom, there it would be. Instead of fighting, there was no fight. They would just say, I'm in pain. That's the magic word, just wow. So your listeners know.
Right, that's great. That's really great information, because, right, unless you're in pain and you just go, all right, just say tomorrow I go to the doctor and say, I think I have cancer here. They're going to look at me like I'm a nut.
Yes, they will. And they'll say, you have no symptoms. Most cancers are asymptomatic until they're too late to be dealt with. You have no symptoms. We can't feel anything. And without symptoms, we cannot do additional testing, because that's hospital policy. And when you're bucking hospital policy, you're not going to win, unless, you know, you're like me and you threaten to kick your feet like a 2-year-old. So what you do is you go in there with, I'm in pain, I'm in a lot of pain right here. And usually they'll just go right to the MRI, which is what you want anyhow, because if you're young and you've got dense breasts, it's not probably not going to show up, which is what was happening with me. Here I have an MRI, a mammogram, and I've got a 9 by 11 centimeter lobular tumor, and they don't even know it.
Right. Oh, my gosh. That is so incredibly nuts. And it just doesn't have to be like one person had lung cancer, right? He got that out of a dream.
He got that out of a dream. We've got 41 stories in this book, and they're not all breast cancer. In fact, they're not all cancers. We've got cystic fibrosis. We have diabetes. There's a number of other diseases where people had a dream, really bizarre dreams. Do you have time for me to tell you one of these, the most bizarre dreams in here?
Oh, the listeners will kill me if I don't. Do it, please.
Okay. It's in this book, and it's called The Silver Spaceship Saved My Life. And the person in this dream had gone for a checkup, and she found that she had stage 4 uterine cancer. She was like in her 20s, early 20s, had a 2-year-old child. And the doctor said, we've tried everything. She went through all these different treatments, lost her hair, the whole works, nothing was working. The doctor said, we've come to the end of the road. There's nothing else we can do. Go home, get your house in order, you know, figure out what you're going to do with your child. You've got about 2 months. So she was devastated, and she went home, and she had a dream that night. And in the dream, this silver spaceship came down and landed in her backyard. And she heard it. And in the dream, she got up and she walked out to the spaceship. And there were these little people that got out of the spaceship. And they walked up to her and they said, you need interferon. And she said, what? They said, you need interferon for your cancer. Remember this, interferon. Go back to your doctor. And then they turn around, they walk back in the spaceship, and the spaceship took off. And in her dream, she walked back into her bedroom, got back in her bed, and went to sleep. So the next morning when she woke up, she remembered the dream. She went back to her doctor and she said, I know you're going to think this is really crazy, but this is what happened. And she dared to tell her doctor the dream. And the doctor turned white and he said, what did they tell you you needed? And she said, interferon. Do you know what that is? And can you get it for me? He said, that's a new chemotherapy that just came out, but it's not even on the market. There are some study groups. He says, that's the only way I can get that drug for you is to get you in one of these study groups, but I can't guarantee anything because it's so new. He says, but we have nothing to lose. Got her in the study group. That was 20 years ago.
Oh my, unbelievable. That's just incredible. That is just incredible. Kat, I mean, I am so grateful that you're on our show and telling everyone this. And again, the name of your book is?
Dreams That Can Save Your Life, Early Warning Signs of Cancer and Other Diseases.
Amazing. Amazing. And it's on Amazon now, right?
Yes, it's on Amazon. It's in all the Barnes and Nobles. It's on Simon & Schuster. It's on Inner Traditions. It's very easy to find.
And Kat, where can our guests, where can our listeners contact you?
You can go to my website, which is KathleenO'KeefeCannabis.com. But if my name is too much to remember, just go to the Queen of Dreams.
Beautiful.
Put that in your search bar, the Queen of Dreams. It'll take you right there.
That's beautiful. Kat, I can't thank you enough. I mean, this is the most amazing. And I wish you and Tough Brother Seth and I both wish you all the luck with this book. I think it's just going to be amazing. I can't wait to read it. I'm so excited. I want to get a copy for mom because, you know, mail manager mom, that's all she does is read. And she orders a book a day from Amazon and the guy delivers one a day just about. It's amazing. But I'm going to have to get a copy for mom. And Kat, thank you. Thank you so very, very much for being our guest.
Thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
And anytime that you have something come up, please reach out and we'll talk anyway. We're friends, so we'll talk. But again, everyone, it's the name of the book is?
Dreams That Can Save Your Life, Early Warning Signs of Cancer and Other Diseases. And if you have a dream, like the ones I just talked about, send it to me at catcan@comcast.net. We're doing book 2.
Excellent. Thank you, Kat. Have Bye-bye. A wonderful, wonderful day.
Thank you. Bye-bye, everyone.
Big hugs.
Big hug to you, too.
The One Tough Mother Podcast. Real talk with amazing women who have worked their way to the top and want to share their real life lessons with you.
And we're back. We've got headaches and headlines. Hit it, Seth.
Whoa, hit it.
Hit
I feel like I'm on stage. You mentioned earlier about pets a little bit, and there's a little story about pets. It's a segue after the interview, but we're going to go into it anyway. Emotional support pets lose support. Well, this is a bummer. Are emotional support pets going out of fashion? American Airlines, the biggest in the U.S., has joined United, Delta, and Alaska in issuing new rules about bringing the pets on board, including requiring advance notice, a letter from a mental health professional, and a form attesting that the animal will not relieve itself in the cabin. SF Gate, SanFranciscoGate.com says the rules also bar disruptive behavior, as well as all amphibians, ferrets, goats, hedgehogs, insects, reptiles, rodents, snakes, spiders, sugar gliders, non-household birds like chickens, geese, and hawks, and any animal with tusks, horns, or hooves, with the exception of miniature horses, if properly trained, per SF Gate.
Wait a minute. You can take a miniature horse in the cabin of a plane, but they're not going to let you take a sugar glider or a...
Can you tell me what a sugar glider is?
Like a little squirrel that glides through the air.
What?
Yeah, they're little... Look them up on it.
I've never heard of a sugar glider.
They're really cute, actually. And they were popular like a couple years ago as pets.
I got a sugar glider. You got a sugar glider?
I got a sugar glider. Yeah, can you believe it? I can't believe it. Stop. I read this story and said, wait a minute. Am I reading it wrong? And you just read it exactly how I read it. You can take a miniature horse in the cabin of a plane.
Well, now I can't bring my goat on anymore. I'm very upset.
And you're going to sign a letter attesting to the fact that your animal will not relieve itself in the cabin. Well, then what do you put in? It depends on it.
That's a good idea.
Actually, that's what I would do.
Yeah. See, you're always thinking outside the box.
That's me.
And inside the cabin.
Very funny.
I don't know. I don't know what to think about this. This is a little crazy. But it's not totally banning it. It's just, you have to, you know. I gotta say too, the first thing I thought of in this day and age is terrorism too. I mean, I'm sure you could use these animals, like, you know.
Yeah. I didn't even think of that, dude. Yeah.
Tape a bomb to one of them or something.
Right. Well, actually, when I was military, we used to fly home and bring our dog home, but the dog always had to be in a crate in the where the luggage was because it was a big dog. But I've seen people with little dogs on the plane.
I brought my cat I worked cross country and I moved cross country and I brought my cat on a couple different flights.
That must have been tough, dude. Cat, did you have to give it something to relax it?
I did, actually. Yeah, I gave him a little something from the vet. The first time I did that, I thought I was poking him. I thought he was dead. I think I killed my cat.
You're whacked.
Knocked out. I did. I thought he was dead.
He's knocked out.
Cats are never like out where, like, you know, you poke them, they don't move. Oh. So I'm nervous, but let's move on. Facebook boom. Facebook says it shut down 1.3 billion fake accounts in the last 6 months as hate speech, terrorism, and violence continue to flood the site. Facebook has published its first community standards report since the Cambridge Analytica scandal first erupted earlier this year. It revealed that it suspended 1.3 billion fake accounts in the last 6 months. The firm also moderated millions of posts spreading hate speech and terrorism. Artificial intelligence tools have increased success in spotting content. Facebook acknowledged that its artificial intelligence detection technology still doesn't work that well, particularly when it comes to hate speech, and that it needs to be checked by human moderators. It's important to stress that this is very much a work in progress, and we will likely change our methodology as we continue to learn more about what's important and what works, says Guy Rosen, Vice President of Product Management at Facebook, in a statement. We have a lot of work still to do to prevent abuse, he added. I mean, that's great that they're on top of it, you know?
And they're trying. 1.3 billion with a B?
That's
fake
a lot.
Accounts. I mean, I don't know. I forget how, is it 6 billion people are on Facebook? I forget. I thought that number came to my mind, so.
Well, that's, you know, like ISIS and other terrorist groups, it's their number one recruiting tool is social media. So if we can get ahead of that and try to, you know, curb that a little bit, I mean,
Doesn't it blow your mind that it's the world? Seriously? It's the world you're speaking to when you're on social media?
Yeah, it's crazy. And like, it lives forever.
Yeah.
You know, nothing is ever erased. There's no internet eraser.
I know when I first started One Tough Mother 7 years ago, Facebook gave me such a rash because they said it was bullying. One Tough Mother, M-U-T-H-E-R. I had to keep sending them, like, this is my trademark registered company. This is my name. You know, I own this. It's a company. And after, maybe 6 or 8 attempts, they sent me back a letter and said, okay, we've checked it out and we've identified that it is your trademark registered company and we've seen that things that you posted. So I never had problems after that. But in the beginning, 7 years ago, yeah, they gave me a rash of it, man.
Yeah, you really fooled them.
Yep.
Okay, well, this next one, I can say personally that I am part of the solution and not part of the problem.
I do think that, yes.
Yes. The coming baby drought. The number of people on Earth under 15 years old is expected to hit a peak of 2.09 billion in 2057. Oh, wow, 2057. After that, we are looking at a global decline in young people. How could they know that now?
Right.
The shift has already begun in much of the world's affluent economies, with Japan and South Korea graying the fastest. As the number of workers dwindles and the elderly population expands, the case for robot workers will likely grow stronger, reports Axios. 2057, I will be dead.
Yeah. You know what? I thought this too. I was like, well, me personally and my kids.
I'll be 97.
Yeah, you'll be 97. You'll be alive. Me and my kids are like totally, we're part of the solution. You're part of the solution. But how do they know that? 2057. How many years is that? It's what? 40.
I think it's all like, you know, analytics and running, you know, it's just all estimates.
It's trends, yeah. Right. You know, trend. Yeah.
Who knows? You know, maybe Prince Harry and Meghan Markle will have lots of kids.
Yeah, do it. Help. Do it.
More royals. Yes. Oh, you know, it's, you know what bothered me? I got to say, because we're going to talk about Prince Harry and Meghan Markle will marry Saturday at St. George's Chapel at Windsor Castle in England. What bothers me about this, you know, Melissa watches CBS This Morning. You say, oh, they're live from they're in England all week and everything. I said, that's the one show I don't want there. Okay. Because, well, everyone else is there. I said, exactly. When you're like, you know, CBS This Morning to me is like a pretty serious morning show and I like it. That's the one that shouldn't be there.
Right.
Like, you know, let everyone else run over there and people are getting married and they're royal.
Right.
I don't know. For me, it's like, good luck. You know, I'm happy for you. And if you're into watching that, I'm not going to make fun of you, but the same time, it's like, okay, great. I don't know.
Is Melissa gonna watch it?
I probably not. I don't know.
Well, you're gonna face this, dude. It's gonna be on the internet a million jillion times for the rest of your life. You're gonna see it no matter what. So
I was like 11. When I was 11, I didn't get it then either with the Princess Diana and all that. I was like, who cares?
Yeah. No.
I still don't care. Although I like, as far as royals go, I like Prince Harry because he seems like he's little outside the box and does what he wants. Which
he totally is. She was divorced. Yeah. She's from a mixed marriage. She's like,
mixed herself.
Yeah, she's right. American. He's totally outside the box. I love it.
Yeah, I like that. And it's good that. Well, it's also they're showing a sign of the times. You know, if this was 200 years ago, he would have been killed or something. You know, they would have been like, you're extradited. You're no longer royal. You're extradited to the basement.
Yes. Be off with his head. But you know what
exactly
blew my mind? They are going to have children no older than 7 years old in their wedding. 6 bridesmaids and 4 page boys. And the youngest is 2. Now, how? I can't figure this out. How are you going to control children younger than 7 in such an enormous production?
There'll be adults there like whacking them with sticks behind their back.
Oh, poking them as they go down the aisle.
Yeah. Come on. All right, let's go.
Oh, yeah. Because you're talking about Princess Charlotte is 2. I can't. All right. So my granddaughter, Brittany, just turned 3. At 2, sending her down the aisle in front of how many hundreds of people? Uh-uh. Ain't happening.
Yeah. Yeah, well, now I want to watch. See, you just sold me on it. I want to see like a train wreck. Thanks.
Well, it's the truth of the matter is, you know, maybe they they're taught? I don't know. Do they raise them differently from birth on and they're expected to know? Or I don't know.
You wouldn't understand, Karen. They're royalty.
Oh, you're right. Thank you very much.
Yes. Yes. And that concludes our headlines and headaches for today.
Lovely. And boop, boop, boop. Mail's in.
Okay. Email number one, dear one tough mother. How do I go from living for 4 years in a house at college with four best friend sisters back to my parents' house with mom, dad, and two high school brothers? Now that I've graduated, I need a job and an apartment, but most of all money, because fitting in back here is going to be so hard. Help.
Oh boy.
I'll let you go first.
That's a tough. Okay. All four of my kids out of college. My oldest son moved in with his girlfriend, who's now his wife. My second son came home and then went to the police academy, but he stayed here a while, so he didn't have to pay. Well, he was gone all week, but so he didn't have to pay rent. My third son stayed here like a year until they got married, I think a year later. And then my daughter stayed here for like 2 years with her fiance till they got married. It's tough. It is. I mean, it's tough for everybody all the way around because you're out on your own. You're doing whatever the hell you want. And then all of a sudden you move back into your parents' house. Now, I don't know, moving back in with two little brothers or kids, brothers in high school, that might be tough, but you're going to have to compromise, dude, because you don't have money, you don't have a job, and you got school loans. So believe me, you're not in any situation that nobody else is coming out of a college right now. Everybody's not safe.
One of the things you can do is, you know, you can get a job waiting tables or bartending, get a couple of roommates and get an apartment and kind of keep living that college life a little bit. You know, it's a little bit of a struggle, but if it's that, you know, if it's that important to you, you'll find a way to do it.
Exactly. I mean, yeah.
Unless just sitting there applying for jobs on a computer with no experience, it's going to take time. And I think as an employer, as someone who's looked at resumes and everything, if I was hiring someone who was just out of school and I saw that they were actually working, doing something, that would be impressive to me to be, you know, just paying bills and working and hustling, you know, that shows initiative.
Yeah, so, I agree. And you know what?
Go ahead, sir.
Oh, go ahead, sir.
I was going to say, just make the best of your situation. And if it's something you really want, you'll have to work harder for it. That's all.
I agree. And you know what? You can't just sit there and wait for somebody to ring your doorbell and say, okay, so you have a degree in this, you're here, you know, let's go. No, you have to, you've got to do something until that time. So that was a great, great advice because I bartended, you bartended, I waitressed, you waitressed. Or no, you didn't waitress.
I waitered.
Waitered. And yes. You do what you have to do, right?
Right. I tell you, it's good money. It's cash. It'll help you pay bills. You know, you get an apartment, share an apartment with a couple of people. And, you know, at least you'll have that. You'll be struggling, but you'll be taking care of yourself. You'll be an adult.
Right. I agree. Yeah. So that's our advice to you.
And on the other flip side, there's nothing wrong. If people want to, you know, I have a niece that moved back in. If you're comfortable with your parents and your family and you want to save money and you know, do it that way too, there's nothing wrong with that either.
Right. Just work a lot, you know, like
exactly.
work a lot and just work towards something. I mean, I think initially everybody kind of has to step in back into their parents' house for a little bit, just, you know, work and be considerate. It's not a frat house anymore. It's not a paternity or a fraternity house. You have to be considerate of their rules and what's happening.
True. All right. Let's go to email number two. Dear one tough mother, my 12-year-old daughter is a recluse. She spends so much time, too much time alone. She's always in her bedroom reading, watching TV or on the computer. She acts like I'm leading her to the guillotine if I set up a play date with my girlfriend's 11-year-old daughter. I don't leave her at their house. I stay and visit with my girlfriend, but Bess constantly hovers around us and barely interacts with my friend's daughter, Sammy. I've spent endless hours worrying and asking Bess how she feels or if something's wrong. All she says is she doesn't have anything in common with Sammy, and I'm forcing her to be her friend so I can visit with her mother. Here's a bit of our history. Bess is my only child. Bess's dad and I divorced when she was six, and he hasn't been a very big part of her life. Shortly after our divorce, he married his mistress, and a few years later had twin girls who are now nine and recently a baby boy. Seeing or spending time with Bess is difficult, as he puts it. She won't interact with his wife or the twins and constantly asks to be taken home. On the positive side, I have a wonderful job that allows me to work from home 2 days a week with excellent benefits. We live in a nice condo in a very nice area of the city. Bess goes to a top-rated private school and gets great grades, so at least that part of Bess's life appears stable. In the middle of this school year, I spoke to Bess's teacher, her school counselor, and her pediatrician about increasing her antisocial behavior. About her increasing antisocial behavior, sorry, not increasing it. That would be not good. The teacher pointed out that Bess has always been a bit of a loner, which is true, and hasn't noticed much of a change. I recently met with a wonderful therapist recommended by Bess's pediatrician, and I asked Bess to speak to her. Well, Bess freaked out. She absolutely refuses to go and says she will not talk to that shrink. Just leave me alone. She screams. I'm not hurting anyone. I'm at my wit's end. I don't know. I don't want to keep upsetting Bess because I am terrified of what she might do. You hear such scary things that kids do now. I refuse to push her. Do you have any suggestions on how to move forward and get Bess help? I feel lost.
Oh, wow. Go on this one, because you were just talking about how well-rounded your son is. Give some suggestions.
You know, coming from divorced family, I think that she feels like she's been rejected and replaced. And I think that's where a lot of her pain comes from. Not that I'm not a therapist. I don't want to get any like hate mail or anything. This is just my opinion. And it's tough. I think you have to, I think mom just has to keep being supportive of her and let her be her socialness, you know, take her to movies or, you know, spend time with her and try to do things socially with your daughter, you know, and show her as much love and compassion as you can, because I think she's really missing out on that. And, can you imagine that your father left? I went through this maybe not to this extent, but you know, my dad got remarried, had another child, and you know, I didn't realize as much then because it was just right life as I do now. Because she was six, I was just little. I was like two when my parents got divorced, so it just seemed like normalcy to me. But she knows, she remembers, you know, and she was rejected, and her dad has other kids that he loves and spends time with, and you know, that I think that's where a lot of it comes from.
I agree.
But she's doing well in school. And, you know, I would say just, you know, I would keep trying to get her to go to talk to therapists, but you got to like really ease into that. And, you know, and just spend as much time with your own lover as much as you can to try to make up for that. You know, and I wonder if there's any grandparents or any other family members that can actually help and be supportive and spend time with her as well, if she has any cousins or anything like that.
I agree. And I'm going to go on the other end a little bit with, okay, you're her mother and she's 12. So she's probably starting puberty, and saying that she freaks out and she's not going to go and you're not going to push her. You're her mother. You need to say, hey, I'm going to go with you. We're going to go together. But I think she needs another outlet, someone else to speak to. And some kids are just loners. I mean, realistically, some kids just are loners. I agree with everything Seth says. She probably feels like she's been replaced in her father's life. She keeps asking to come home. She doesn't want to be there or whatever the case is, or interact with the other family. You are her rock. You are her stability. You are the person that's there, obviously, 24/7, 365. So she feels comfortable with that. But I can understand that she wants to come home. But I think before she gets into full-blown puberty, before she becomes a teen, before she gets involved in the internet doing other things, if she does do that, you need to have her speak to a therapist. And I think you have to be her mom and say, you know, Bess, I know this isn't what you want to do, but I'm going to go with you and I'm going to support you. I'll sit there with you. And you've got great benefits. And for however long it takes, just keep going with her. Eventually, she's going to probably break down and talk. That's my thought on it. And I'm not a therapist. I'm not a doctor. I just know that that's what my course of action would be with one of my kids. If I had that happen, I would say, well, like, I'm your mom. You're 12. You don't get to make this decision. I feel that I need to help you through this. And I think this is the best decision for us together. And we're going to go.
I agree with what you said. Yeah, she has to get her there for sure.
Yeah, because it's, you know, and again, there are kids that are just more of a recluse. They're more of loners. They like to be alone. They like to read. Someone in my family, one of my kids, but in my family, has a child that loves to read, loves to spend a lot of time alone and really absorbs books and gets into books and she's a wonderful, wonderful child. And she's as smart as a whip. And she's a beautiful kid. And she's great socially as well. But I think if she's missing that social aspect at 12 and she doesn't have a social part of her life, she needs to learn that. And that needs to be a learned behavior. So she needs to see someone to help her with it.
I agree.
Okay. So that's our suggestion. We hope that it works out. And again, we're not professionals, but we give you the best advice that we would take for our families. So like, these are the things that I would think if Seth called me and said this about him, one of his kids, or I told him about one of my, these are the things that we really try to, these are just good old fashioned motherly advice. That's how we look at it. So that's that for today. And you want to hear Mother Says?
I'm waiting.
Okay. Mother Says today is, don't burn your opportunities for temporary comfort. How weird is that? We're talking about the woman that's kind of getting out of college. Don't burn your opportunities for temporary comfort. Get out. Do something. Keep living. Keep moving. Don't stop just because you're comfortable. Live outside the box. That's where growth is. And with that, we say, rain, go away. Please, please. And we'll talk to you next week, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, have a good one, everybody. Thanks.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.